Just the same, I wouldn't advise you to try to get up into the elders' aerie. I don't think you'd like what would happen if they found a tribesman inside. Well, best of the dawn to you. And he rose suddenly, without warning, and hurried away. Selden looked after him, rather surprised. What made him rush off like that? I think, said Doors, it's because someone is approaching. And someone was. A tall man in an elaborate white kirtle, crossed by an even more elaborate and subtly glittering red sash, glided solemnly toward them. He had the unmistakable look of a man with authority, and the even more unmistakable look of one who is not pleased. 53. Harry Selden rose as the new Mycogenian approached. He hadn't the slightest idea whether that was the appropriate polite behavior, but he had the distinct feeling it would do no harm. Doris Venabile rose with him and carefully kept her eyes lowered. The other stood before them. He, too, was an old man, but more subtly aged than Mycelium 72. Age seemed to lend distinction to his still handsome face. His bald head was beautifully round, and his eyes were a startling blue, contrasting sharply with the bright, all but glowing red of his sash. The newcomer said, I see you are tribes people. His voice was more high-pitched than Selden had expected, but he spoke slowly, as though conscious of the weight of authority in every word he uttered. So we are, said Selden, politely but firmly. He saw no reason not to defer to the other's position, but he did not intend to abandon his own. Your names? I am Harry Selden of Helicon. My companion is Doris Venabile of Cinna. And yours, man of Mycogen? The eyes narrowed in displeasure, but he too could recognize an air of authority when he felt it. I am Skystrip II, he said, lifting his head higher. An elder of the Sacratorium. And your position, tribesman? We, said Selden, emphasizing the pronoun, are scholars of Streeling University. I am a mathematician, and my companion is a historian, and we are here to study the ways of Mycogen. By whose authority? By that of Sunmaster 14, who greeted us on our arrival. Skystrip 2 fell silent for a moment, and then a small smile appeared on his face, and he took on an air that was almost benign. He said, The High Elder, I know him well. And so you should, said Selden blandly. Is there anything else, Elder? Yes. The Elder strove to regain the high ground. Who was the man who was with you and who hurried away when I approached? Selden shook his head. We never saw him before, Elder, and know nothing about him. We encountered him purely by accident and asked about the Sacratorium. What did you ask him? Two questions, Elder. We asked if that building was the Sacratorium and if tribespeople were allowed to enter it. He answered in the affirmative to the first question and in the negative to the second. Quite so. And what is your interest in the Sacratorium? Sir, we are here to study the ways of Mycogen, and is not the Sacratorium the heart and brain of Mycogen? It is entirely ours and reserved for us. Even if an elder, the High Elder, would arrange for permission in view of our scholarly function? Have you indeed the High Elder's permission? Selden hesitated the slightest moment, while Dora's eyes lifted briefly to look at him sideways. He decided he could not carry off a lie of this magnitude. No, he said. Not yet. Or ever, said the elder. You are here in Mycogen by authority. But even the highest authority cannot exert total control over the public. We value our sacratorium, and the populace can easily grow excited over the presence of a tribesperson anywhere in Mycogen, but most particularly in the vicinity of the sacratorium. It would take one excitable person to raise a cry of invasion, and a peaceful crowd such as this one would be turned into one that would be thirsting to tear you apart. I mean that quite literally. For your own good, even if the High Elder has shown you kindness, leave. Now. But the Sacratorium, said Selden stubbornly, though Doris was pulling gently at his kirtle. What is there in the Sacratorium that can possibly interest you? Said the Elder. You see it now. There is nothing for you to see in the interior. There is the robot, said Selden. The Elder stared at Selden in shocked surprise, and then, bending to bring his lips close to Selden's ear, whispered harshly, Leave now, or I will raise the cry of invasion myself. Nor, were it not for the High Elder, would I give you even this one chance to leave. And Doris, with surprising strength, nearly pulled Selden off his feet as she stepped hastily away, dragging him along until he caught his balance, and stepped quickly after her. '54. It was over breakfast the next morning, not sooner, that Doris took up the subject, and in a way that Selden found most wounding. She said, Well, that was a pretty fiasco yesterday. Selden, who had honestly thought he had gotten away with it without comment, looked sullen. What made it a fiasco? Driven out is what we were, and for what? What did we gain? Only the knowledge that there is a robot in there. Mycelium 72 said there wasn't. Of course he said that. He's a scholar, or thinks he is, and what he doesn't know about the Sacratorium would probably fill that library he goes to. You saw the Elder's reaction. I certainly did. He would not have reacted like that if there was no robot inside. He was horrified, we knew. That's just your guess, Harry. And even if there was, we couldn't get in. We could certainly try. After breakfast, we go out and buy a sash for me, one of those obayas. I put it on, keep my eyes devoutly downward, and walk right in. Skin cap and all? They'll spot you in a microsecond. No, they won't. We'll go into the library where all the tribespeople data is kept. I'd like to see it anyway. From the library, which is a sacratorium annex, I gather, there will probably be an entrance into the sacratorium. Where you will be picked up at once. Not at all. You heard what Mycelium 72 had to say. Everyone keeps his eyes down and meditates on their great lost world, Aurora. No one looks at anyone else. It would probably be a grievous breach of discipline to do so. Then I'll find the Elder's Airy. Just like that. At one point, Mycelium 72 said he would advise me not to try to get up into the Elder's Airy. Up. It must be somewhere in that tower of the Sacratorium, the central tower. Doris shook her head. I don't recall the man's exact words, and I don't think you do either. That's a terribly weak foundation to... Wait. She stopped suddenly and frowned. Well, said Selden. There is an archaic word, Airy, that means a dwelling place on high. Ah, there you are. You see, we've learned some vital things as the result of what you call a fiasco. And if I can find a living robot that's 20,000 years old, and if it can tell me... Suppose that such a thing exists, which passes belief, and that you find it, which is not very likely. How long do you think you will be able to talk to it before your presence is discovered? I don't know. But if I can prove it exists, and if I can find it, then I'll think of some way to talk to it. It's too late for me to back out now under any circumstances. Hummon should have left me alone when I thought there was no way of achieving psychohistory. Now that it seems there may be, I won't let anything stop me, short of being killed. The Mycogenians may oblige, Harry, and you can't run that risk. Yes, I can. I'm going to try. No, Harry. I must look after you, and I can't let you. You must let me. Finding a way to work out psychohistory is more important than my safety. My safety is only important because I may work out psychohistory. Prevent me from doing so, and your task loses its meaning. Think about it. Harry felt himself infused with a renewed sense of purpose. Psychohistory, his nebulous theory that he had, such a short while ago, despaired ever of proving, loomed larger, more real. Now he had to believe that it was possible. He could feel it in his gut. The pieces seemed to be falling together, and although he couldn't see the whole pattern yet, he was sure the Sacratorium would yield another piece to the puzzle. Then I'll go in with you so I can pull you out, you idiot, when the time comes. Women can't enter. What makes me a woman? Only this gray kirtle. You can't see my breasts under it. I don't have a woman's style hairdo with the skin cap on. I have the same washed, unmarked face a man has. The men here don't have stubble. All I need is a white kirtle and a sash, and I can enter. Any sister could do it if she wasn't held back by a taboo. I am not held back by one. You're held back by me. I won't let you. It's too dangerous. No more dangerous for me than for you. But I must take the risk. Then so must I. Why is your imperative greater than mine? Because... Selden paused and thought. Just tell yourself this, said Doris, her voice hard as rock. I won't let you go there without me. If you try, I will knock you unconscious and tie you up. If you don't like that, then give up any thought of going alone. Selden hesitated and muttered darkly. He gave up the argument, at least for now. 55. The sky was almost cloudless, but it was a pale blue as though wrapped in a high, thin mist. That, thought Selden, was a good touch. But suddenly he missed the sun itself. No one on Trantor saw the planet's sun unless he or she went upperside, and even then only when the natural cloud layer broke. Did native Trantorians miss the sun? Did they give it any thought? When one of them visited another world where a natural sun was in view, did he or she stare, half-blinded at it, with awe? Why, he wondered, did so many people spend their lives not trying to find answers to questions, not even thinking of questions to begin with? Was there anything more exciting in life than seeking answers? His glance shifted to ground level. The wide roadway was lined with low buildings, most of them shops. Numerous individual ground cars moved in both directions, each hugging the right side. They seemed like a collection of antiques, but they were electrically driven and quite soundless. Selden wondered if antique was always a word to sneer at. Could it be that silence made up for slowness? Was there any particular hurry to life after all? There were a number of children on the walkways, and Selden's lips pressed together in annoyance. Clearly, an extended lifespan for the Mycogenians was impossible unless they were willing to indulge in infanticide. The children of both sexes, though it was hard to tell the boys from the girls, wore kirtles that came only a few inches below the knee, making the wild activity of childhood easier. The children also still had hair, reduced to an inch in length at most. But even so, the older ones among them had hoods attached to their kirtles and wore them raised, hiding the top of the head altogether. It was as though they were getting old enough to make the hair seem a trifle obscene, or old enough to be wishing to hide it, in longing for the day of rite of passage when they were depilated. A thought occurred to Selden. He said, "Dors, when you've been out shopping, who paid, you or the raindrop women?" "I did, of course. The raindrops never produced a credit tile. But why should they? What was being bought was for us, not for them." "But you have a Trantorian credit tile, a tribeswoman credit tile." "Of course, Harry, but there was no problem. The people of Mycogen may keep their own culture and ways of thought and habits of life as they wish. They can destroy their cephalic hair and wear kirtles. Nevertheless, they must use the world's credits. If they don't, that would choke off commerce, and no sensible person would want to do that. The credits nerve, Harry." She held up her hand as though she was holding an invisible credit tile. "And they accepted your credit tile?" "Never a peep out of them, and never a word about my skin cap. Credits sanitize everything." "Well, that's good. So I can buy." "No, I'll do the buying. Credits may sanitize everything, but they more easily sanitize a tribeswoman. They're so used to paying women little or no attention that they automatically pay me the same. And here's the clothing store I've been using." "I'll wait out here. Get me a nice red sash, one that looks impressive." "Don't pretend you've forgotten our decision. I'll get two, and another white kirtle also, to my measurements." "Won't they think it odd that a woman would be buying a white kirtle?" "Of course not. They'll assume I'm buying it for a male companion who happens to be my size. Actually, I don't think they'll bother with any assumptions at all, as long as my credit tile is good." Selden waited, half expecting someone to come up and greet him as a tribesman, or denounce him as one, more likely. But no one did. Those who passed him did so without a glance, and even those who glanced in his direction moved on seemingly untouched. He was especially nervous about the gray kirtles, the women walking by in pairs, or even worse, with a man. They were downtrodden, unnoticed, snubbed. How better to gain a brief notoriety than by shrieking at the sight of a tribesman? But even the women moved on. "They're not expecting to see a tribesman," Selden thought, "so they don't see one." That, he decided, augured well for their forthcoming invasion of the Sacratorium. How much less would anyone expect to see tribespeople there, and how much more effectively would they therefore fail to see them? He was in fairly good humor when Dors emerged. "You have everything?" "Absolutely." "Then let's go back to the room so you can change." The white kirtle did not fit her quite as well as the gray one did. Obviously, she could not have tried it on, or even the densest shopkeeper would have been struck with alarm. "How do I look, Harry?" she asked. "Exactly like a boy," said Selden. "Now let's try the sash, or obaya. I had better get used to calling it that." Dors, without her skin cap, was shaking out her hair gratefully. She said sharply, Don't put it on now. We're not going to parade through Mycogen with the sash on. The last thing we want to do is call attention to ourselves. No, no, I just want to see how it goes on. Well, not that one. This one is better quality and more elaborate. You're right, Doris. I've got to gather in what attention there is. I don't want them to detect you as a woman. I'm not thinking of that, Harry. I just want you to look pretty. 1,000 thanks, but that's impossible, I suspect. Now, let's see. How does this work? Together, Harry and Doris practiced putting their abayas on and taking them off, over and over again, until they could do it in one fluid motion. Doris taught Harry how to do it, as she had seen a man doing it the day before at the Sacratorium. When Harry praised her for her acute observations, she blushed and said, "It's really nothing, Harry, just something I noticed." Harry replied, "Then you're a genius for noticing." Finally satisfied, they stood well apart, each surveying the other. Harry's abaya glittered, a bright red dragon-like design standing out against a paler field of similar hue. Doris was a little less bold, had a simple thin line down the center, and was very light in color. "There," she said, "just enough to show good taste." She took it off. "Now," said Selden, "we fold it up and it goes into one of the inner pockets. I have my credit tile, Hummins really, and the key to this place in this one, and here on the other side, the book." "The book? Should you be carrying it around?" "I must. I'm guessing that anyone going to the Sacratorium ought to have a copy of the book with him. They may intone passages or have readings. If necessary, we'll share the book, and maybe no one will notice. Ready?" "I'll never be ready, but I'm going with you." "It will be a tedious trip. Will you check my skin cap and make sure no hair shows this time? And don't scratch your head." "I won't." "You look all right."
"So do you."
"You also look nervous."
And Selden said wryly, "Guess why?"
Doris reached out impulsively and squeezed Harry's hand, then drew back as if surprised at herself. Looking down, she straightened her white kirtle. Harry, himself a trifle surprised and peculiarly pleased, cleared his throat and said, "Okay, let's go."
Airy. Robot. A term used in the ancient legends of several worlds for what are more usually called automata. Robots are described as generally human in shape and made of metal, although some are supposed to have been pseudo-organic in nature. Harry Selden, in the course of the flight, is popularly supposed to have seen an actual robot, but that story is of dubious origin. Nowhere in Selden's voluminous writings does he mention robots at all, although... Encyclopedia Galactica. 56. They were not noticed. Harry Selden and Doris Van Abbele repeated the trip of the day before, and this time no one gave them a second look. Hardly anyone even gave them a first look. On several occasions, they had to tuck their knees to one side to allow someone sitting on an inner seat to get past them and out. When someone got in, they quickly realized they had to move over if there was an inner empty seat. This time they quickly grew tired of the smell of kirtles that were not freshly laundered, because they were not so easily diverted by what went on outside. But eventually they were there. "That's the library," said Selden in a low voice.
"I suppose so," said Doris. "At least that's the building that Mycelium 72 pointed out yesterday."
They sauntered toward it leisurely.
"Take a deep breath," said Selden. "This is the first hurdle."
The door ahead was open, the light within subdued. There were 5 broad stone steps leading upward. They stepped onto the lowermost one and waited several moments before they realized that their weight did not cause the steps to move upward.
Doris grimaced very slightly and gestured Selden upward.
Together, they walked up the stairs, feeling embarrassed on behalf of Mycogen for its backwardness. Then, through a door, where, at a desk immediately inside, was a man bent over the simplest and clumsiest computer Selden had ever seen. The man did not look up at them. No need, Selden supposed. White kirtle, bald head. All Mycogenians looked so nearly the same that one's eyes slid off them, and that was to the tribespeople's advantage at the moment. The man, who still seemed to be studying something on the desk, said, "Scholars?"
"Scholars," said Selden.
The man jerked his head toward a door.
"Go in. Enjoy."
They moved inward, and as nearly as they could see, they were the only ones in this section of the library. Either the library was not a popular resort, or the scholars were few, or most likely, both.
Selden whispered, "I thought surely we would have to present some sort of license or permission form, and I would have to plead having forgotten it."
"He probably welcomes our presence under any terms. Did you ever see a place like this? If a place, like a person, could be dead, we would be inside a corpse."
Most of the books in this section were print books, like the book in Selden's inner pocket. Doris drifted along the shelves, studying them. She said,
"Old books, for the most part. Part classic, part worthless."
"Outside books? Non-Mycogen, I mean?"
"Oh, yes. If they have their own books, they must be kept in another section. This one is for outside research, for poor little self-styled scholars like yesterday's. This is the reference department. And here's an Imperial Encyclopedia. Must be 50 years old, if a day. And a computer."
She reached for the keys, and Selden stopped her.
"Wait. Something could go wrong, and we'll be delayed."
He pointed to a discreet sign above a freestanding set of shelves that glowed with the letters, "To the Secretorium." The second A in Secretorium was dead, possibly recently, or possibly because no one cared. The Empire, thought Selden, was in decay, all parts of it. Mycogen too. He looked about. The poor library, so necessary to Mycogenian pride, perhaps so useful to the elders who could use it to find crumbs to shore up their own beliefs and present them as being those of sophisticated tribespeople, seemed to be completely empty. No one had entered after them.
Selden said, "Let's step in here, out of eyeshot of the man at the door, and put on our sashes."
And then, at the door, aware suddenly there would be no turning back if they passed this second hurdle, he said,
"Doris, don't come in with me."
She frowned.
"Why not?"
"It's not safe, and I don't want you to be at risk."
"I am here to protect you," she said with soft firmness.
"What kind of protection can you be? I can protect myself, though you may not think it. And I'd be handicapped by having to protect you, don't you see that?"
"You mustn't be concerned about me, Harry," said Doris. "Concern is my part."
She tapped her sash where it crossed in the space between her obscured breasts.
"Because Haman asked you to?"
"Because those are my orders."
She seized Selden's arms just above his elbow, and as always, he was surprised by her firm grip. She said,
"I'm against this, Harry. But if you feel you must go in, then I must go in too.
All right, then. But if anything happens and you can wriggle out of it, run. Don't worry about me.
You're wasting your breath, Harry, and you're insulting me.
Selden touched the entrance panel, and the portal slid open. Together, almost in unison, they walked through. 57.
A large room, all the larger because it was empty of anything resembling furniture. No chairs, no benches, no seats of any kind. No stage, no drapery, no decorations. No lights, merely a uniform illumination of mild, unfocused light. The walls were not entirely blank. Periodically, arranged in spaced fashion at various heights and in no easy repetitive order, there were small, primitive, two-dimensional television screens, all of which were operating. From where Doris and Selden stood, there was not even the illusion of a third dimension, not a breath of true holovision. There were people present, not many, and nowhere together. They stood singly, and like the television monitors, in no easy repetitive order. All were white-kirtled, all sashed. For the most part, there was silence. No one talked in the usual sense. Some moved their lips, murmuring softly. Those who walked did so stealthily, eyes downcast. The atmosphere was absolutely funereal. Selden leaned toward Doris, who instantly put a finger to her lips, then pointed to one of the television monitors. The screen showed an idyllic garden bursting with blooms, the camera panning over it slowly. They walked toward the monitor in a fashion that imitated the others. Slow steps, putting each foot down softly. When they were within half a meter of the screen, a soft, insinuating voice made itself heard. The Garden of Antennin, as reproduced from ancient guidebooks and photographs, located in the outskirts of Eos. Note the... Doris said in a whisper Selden had trouble catching over the sound of the set. It turns on when someone is close, and it will turn off if we step away. If we're close enough, we can talk undercover, but don't look at me, and stop speaking if anyone approaches. Selden, his head bent, his hands clasped before him, he had noted that this was a preferred posture, said, "Any moment I expect someone to start wailing." "Someone might. They're mourning their lost world," said Doris. "I hope they change the films every once in a while. It would be deadly to always see the same ones." "They're all different," said Doris, her eyes sliding this way and that. "They may change periodically. I don't know." "Wait," said Selden, just a hair's breadth too loud. He lowered his voice and said, "Come this way." Doris frowned, failing to make out the words, but Selden gestured slightly with his head. Again, the stealthy walk. But Selden's footsteps increased in length as he felt the need for greater speed, and Doris, catching up, pulled sharply, if very briefly, at his kirtle. He slowed. "Robots here," he said under the cover of the sound as it came on. The picture showed the corner of a dwelling place with a rolling lawn and a line of hedges in the foreground, and three of what could only be described as robots. They were metallic, apparently, and vaguely human in shape. The recording said, "This is a view, recently constructed, of the establishment of the famous Wendome Estate of the 3rd century. The robot you see near the center was, according to tradition, named Bendar,
and served 22 years, according to the ancient records, before being replaced. Doris said, "Recently constructed, so they must change views."
Unless they've been saying recently constructed for the last 1,000 years.
Another Micogenian stepped into the sound pattern of the scene and said in a low voice, though not as low as the whisperings of Selden and Doors, "Greetings, brothers." He did not look at Selden and Doors as he spoke, and after one involuntary and startled glance, Selden kept his head averted. Doris had ignored it all. Selden hesitated. Mycelium 72 had said that there was no talking in the Sacratorium. Perhaps he had exaggerated. Then, too, he had not been in the Sacratorium since he was a child. Desperately, Selden decided he must speak. He said in a whisper, "And to you, brother, greetings." He had no idea whether that was the correct formula of reply, or if there was a formula, but the Micogenian seemed to find nothing amiss in it. "To you in Aurora," he said. "And to you," said Selden. And because it seemed to him that the other expected more, he added, "In Aurora." And there was an impalpable release of tension. Selden felt his forehead growing moist. The Micogenian said, "Beautiful. I haven't seen this before." "Skillfully done," said Selden. Then, in a burst of daring, he added, "A loss never to be forgotten." The other seemed startled, then said, "Indeed, indeed," and moved away. Doris hissed, "Take no chances. Don't say what you don't have to." It seemed natural. Anyway, this is recent. But those are disappointing robots. They are what I would expect automata to be. I want to see the organic ones, the humanoids. "If they existed," said Doris with some hesitation, "it seems to me they wouldn't be used for gardening jobs." "True," said Selden. "We must find the Elder's Aerie." "If that exists, it seems to me there is nothing in this hollow cave but a hollow cave." "Let's look." They paced along the wall, passing from screen to screen, trying to wait at each for irregular intervals until Doris clutched Selden's arms. Between two screens were lines marking out a faint rectangle. "A door," Doris said. Then she weakened the assertion by adding, "Do you think?" Selden looked about surreptitiously. It was in the highest degree convenient that, in keeping with the morning atmosphere, every face, when not fixed on a television monitor, was bent in sad concentration on the floor. Selden said, "How do you suppose it would open?" "An entrance patch." "I can't make out any." "It's just not marked out. But there's a slight discoloration there. Do you see it? How many palms? How many times?" "I'll try. Keep an eye out and kick me if anyone looks in this direction." He held his breath casually, touched the discolored spot to no avail, and then placed his palm full upon it and pressed. The door opened silently. Not a creak, not a scrape. Selden stepped through as rapidly as he could, and Doris followed him. The door closed behind them. "The question is," said Doris, "did anyone see us?" Selden said, "Elders must go through this door frequently." "Yes, but will anyone think we are elders?" Selden waited, then said, "If we were observed, and if anyone thought something was wrong, this door would have been flung open again within 15 seconds of our entering."
Possibly, said Doris dryly. Or possibly there is nothing to be seen or done on this side of the door, and no one cares if we enter.
That remains to be seen, muttered Selden. The rather narrow room they had entered was somewhat dark, but as they stepped farther into it, the light brightened. There were chairs, wide and comfortable, small tables, several davenports, a deep and tall refrigerator, cupboards. If this is the elders' aerie, said Selden, the elders seem to do themselves comfortably, despite the austerity of the sacratorium itself.
As would be expected, said Doris. Asceticism among a ruling class, except for public show, is very rare. Put that down in your notebook for psychohistorical aphorisms.
She looked about.
And there is no robot.
Selden said, An airy is a high position, remember, and this ceiling is not. There must be upper stories, and that must be the way. He pointed to a well-carpeted stairway. He did not advance toward it, however, but looked about vaguely. Doris guessed what he was seeking. She said,
Forget about elevators. There's a cult of primitivism in Mycogen. Surely you haven't forgotten that, have you? There would be no elevators. And, what's more, if we place our weight at the foot of the stairs, I am quite certain it will not begin moving upward. We're going to have to climb it. Several flights, perhaps.
Climb it?
It must, in the nature of things, lead to the airy, if it leads anywhere. Do you want to see the airy, or don't you?
Together they stepped toward the staircase and began the climb. They went up three flights, and as they did, the light level decreased perceptibly and in steady increments. Selden took a deep breath and whispered, I consider myself to be in pretty good shape, but I hate this.
You're not used to this precise type of physical exertion.
She showed no signs of physical distress whatever. At the top of the third flight, the stairs ended, and before them was another door. And if it's locked, said Selden, more to himself than to Doris, do we try to break it down? But Doris said,
Why should it be locked when the lower door was not? If this is the elders' aerie, I imagine there's a taboo on anyone but elders coming here, and a taboo is much stronger than any lock.
As far as those who accept the taboo are concerned, said Selden. But he made no move toward the door.
There's still time to turn back since you hesitate, said Doris. In fact, I would advise you to turn back.
I only hesitate because I don't know what we'll find inside. If it's empty. And then he added in a rather louder voice, Then it's empty. And he strode forward and pushed against the entry panel. The door retracted with silent speed, and Selden took a step back at the surprising flood of light from within. And there, facing him, eyes alive with light, arms half upraised, one foot slightly advanced before the other, gleaming with a faintly yellow metallic shine, was a human figure.